Welcome to part two of this episode of the Power of the Purse podcast, the only show connecting women professionals to their peers. This isn't just about money. This is about life. And now, the host of the Power of the Purse podcast, Lynn S. Evans.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Lynn S. Evans, and I am the host of Power of the Purse podcast. My guests today are Kathy DeGatti and Ellen Hartnett. Mm-hmm. Okay, let me switch this around now because I'm curious to know about how you ladies dealt with money in your lives. So I'd like to ask you some questions, and whoever wants to jump in first, please do, because I'm fascinated by what brought you to this point. So let me ask the question. I think I know I've heard in my conversations with Kathy, what was your family life like when you were growing up?
I can answer that. I can start with that. It's Ellen. My family life growing up, my father was a police officer. Mm-hmm. My mother was a homemaker, and I put that in quotes because she didn't really cook very well. She didn't really like to clean. And what I do know about my mom was that she was an incredibly talented pianist. And before she met my dad, she was taking piano lessons from someone who believed that she could be a concert pianist to the degree that he gave her lessons for free. It was during the Depression. And so my understanding is that my mother really could have had a career as a concert pianist. And she gave that all up to marry my dad and come and live in the suburbs from living in the Bronx. Mm-hmm. So I think that my mom was somewhat depressed, and no one I knew had working parents back then. Well, that's not true. One or two, but the majority of moms were stay-at-home moms. But I know that my mother was never happy being a stay-at-home mom. She loved being a mom. She loved us. But those were not her things, cooking, cleaning, taking care of the house. She never drove. My dad drove us everywhere. But I had a good childhood. I grew up in a home. It was really modest. My father didn't make up. Cops did not make much money back then at all.
Yeah.
And so he always was moonlighting. He was very, very, very creative and very talented. He could just about do anything that he set his mind to. So there was a pretty big difference between my dad in the family and my mom. But the one thing I heard always was, we can't afford it.
Yeah.
If there was anything around money in my childhood, was whatever you wanted, we can't afford it.
Mm-hmm. And where were you in the birth order, Ellen?
I was the second of two. I had a sister that was 4 years older than me.
Okay. So, Kathy, what about your story?
I'm the oldest of five. My father was a traveling salesman. He was gone a lot when we were kids, so I did a lot of co-parenting along with my mom, who lived in the suburbs, and she, too, really never fit into the mold there at all. She was always trying to find ways of making money on her own that she could get away with, doing dried flower arrangements, and she would have my brothers go around on the days they put garbage out to pick up all the treasures that people were throwing out that she could renovate them and then turn around and sell them and do those kinds of things.
Wow. That's initiative. I like that.
My mother was born in the wrong time. She would have been quite a powerful woman if she were born in a different era.
Yeah. And you said you were one of five?
The oldest of five, yes.
Okay. So you said you did a lot of the co-parenting because your dad wasn't around. So when you, what kind of years separated you from your siblings?
2 years apart from the first four. We were the stair steps. My brother was 2 years, and my sister two, and then my brother two, and then my baby sister's 12 years younger than me.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. She's okay. Grew up in a very different world.
And what, that is true. I mean, I think that's very interesting that you said that, because when you go back and look at, if you and your siblings all sat in the same room and talked about your childhoods, you had five different childhoods.
Right.
Because everybody came into the family at different times with siblings that were either younger and or older, or something, some combination of that. But the way that you dealt with your life was based on where you were in that birth order. And of course, there's the classic story about, you know, the oldest child's always the one who's the innovator, the one who goes out and challenges everything, because essentially you had to. There was nobody ahead of you, so you learned it all. And then, of course, there's the baby, you know, who supposedly got everything, and all in between. But it's really interesting how people carry those perceptions of their childhood with them into adulthood. So one other question I was interested in, Kathy, that Ellen mentioned is, what was it that you learned about money? What was the story? Instead of we can't afford it, did you have something else?
It was the biggest secret that you could have. You
really?
Could absolutely never ever ask what somebody made, or I still can't to this day do that, or talk about what a salary should be. And in my household, things were either really good or they were not really good. And that was the only time anybody ever talked about money, was when you had to suck it up and dial it back a little bit. And so there's always been a big fear around money for me, because no one's ever talked about it with me unless there wasn't any.
Yeah. And so when you needed something as a child, when there's something that you had to have and it cost some money, who did you approach, your mother or your father?
My mother. My father always had his money in his other suit. We never found that suit anywhere.
No kidding.
No.
I love it. In his other suit. Okay. Yeah. So then what did Mom do to get the money to you?
It would depend. She generally tried to give us what we wanted if it was within reason, but it was always like a big favor of some sort. You know, it was always, it was like, I don't know how to describe it so well, as there was a lot of emotion around it always.
Okay.
And it just seemed like it was, it made it very difficult to ask for it.
Mm-hmm.
When you got it, it was something that you needed to be grateful for it for the rest of your life.
Yeah. Ellen, what about you? When you needed something and you went to your mom or your dad for that money, what happened?
I'm just laughing because I can remember a time that I wanted a toy in a toy store that we went to so badly, and both my mom and dad said, "You can't have it. We can't afford it." And I was really young, and I had an absolute temper. It was probably the only time I had a temper tantrum in public, but I had a total temper tantrum, and the store owner gave it to me.
Just to shut you up and get you out of the store?
Yeah, that was a good lesson. My sister, you know, it's really interesting when you were talking, when Kathy was talking about, you know, the position in the family, and you were talking about the baby versus the oldest. So in my family, there was the oldest and me, and I was the baby. But also, I think, you know, my sister was very quiet. She didn't demand things. I did.
Mm-hmm.
I still didn't get a lot of them because we really couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
But I started working in high school, and I've had a million jobs because I wanted to have money of my own. I wish I could say I managed it well, but I was able to earn it. I was always able to earn it. So that, you know, I think that's where it led me. My parents didn't have it. I think they would have given me things if they could have, to a degree.
Yeah.
If I was bratty, I don't think I was going to get any more from my parents.
Okay.
Only the store owner.
Yes.
But
thank God.
I was working in high school and had lots of jobs.
What did you do? What were some of the jobs you had?
Oh, goodness. The first job I had, I think I worked at an A&P when I was old enough to get working papers, which I think was 16. First, I worked at a camp because you didn't need working papers for that. Then I worked as a checkout cashier at the A&P. I worked in a factory. And then in college, I actually worked at the Shulton Old Spice factory literally on assembly lines.
Wow.
Crazy, but it was they used to come to the colleges and recruit us because they would pay us big money, $4 an hour.
Wow.
Money.
All right.
I lived in Guadalajara, Mexico for 2 years when I was in my early 20s and married. And I learned how to speak Spanish fairly quickly, or enough to get a job as a secretary in a stockbroker's office.
Wow.
With no experience. So I've had some crazy jobs then.
Yeah.
I don't know how I qualified for that, except that I was an American girl who lived in the New York area. And that was very fascinating to them. And they hired me as a secretary. As I said, I barely spoke the language, but I got by.
I love it. Okay, so Kathy, how about you? What are some of the jobs you held?
I was a long-distance operator at a time when you sat in front of a switchboard. And dialed zero for everything, the emergency services, and I used to have to sit and listen to the coins drop and the coin drop.
Yeah.
Credit cards were handwritten on punch cards. I can't even explain this to my grandchildren. They have no point of reference to any of what I just said.
So I love it. That's great.
That got me through my high school and college days, and then I started my own business with my mom in 1973.
And what was that business?
And we bought a retail business from someone. It was an existing store. Mm-hmm. It actually did, sold everything. It was a general store. We even did taxidermy work, which is horrifying.
Oh, wow.
Yes, I wrapped the head of a wild boar one night. It was not fun. But that, we started out with 400 square feet, not knowing anything about anything. And over the course of 30 years, it turned into a 6-store strip mall that had over 25 employees, and we were doing over $1 million of business a year.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And so then what happened to that?
Well, it went very bad very quickly. The big box stores and online shopping came to town, and they were selling things for less than I was paying for them at wholesale.
Yeah.
So the demise was swift and painful, and like most businesses that don't have a plan B, we hung in there until there was nothing left. And so I walked away with no pension, nothing, gift wrap after 30 years.
Wow.
I have some bows and gift wrap if you ever need any.
Okay, I'll remember that. That's
I can
good.
Vouch for that. That is the truth. I've seen them.
Maybe you can sell them online.
Yeah, well...
Okay. So here's another question for both of you. What's been the most threatening to your financial security?
Myself.
Yeah. I
really?
Would agree with that. Yeah.
In what way?
I have to say that my parents were tremendous savers. They were very careful, and I grew up in a household where people saved money, and they spent it on necessities. And occasionally something fun or something nice. But most of the time it was save, save, save. And I just went the other way. I was always the rebel. And I think that I spent it as fast as I could make it. And I didn't save. And I didn't plan for my future. And I was an under earner. So the honest truth is always in my head. My day was coming when I'd make enough money so that I could save and spend.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly don't have to tell you that that just doesn't happen by itself. No magic wand came and waved itself over me. And, I went to work when, after I was separated from my first husband, and I had my daughter, Lauren, who's now 42, was like a year old at the time. And I had to go back to work. And I had a college degree as a speech pathologist and an audiologist. But I had been out of the field. I'd been married and raising kids. And I'd been away from the field for a while. And it just wasn't that easy to get a job. So I took a job as a secretary in a law firm, became a legal secretary, worked my way up. And still, I think that my attitude toward money got in my own way, because eventually I made a really nice salary.
Mm-hmm.
But no savings, no planning for the future, fly by the seat of my pants attitude, that was my biggest problem.
Yeah, well, I could see how that would be threatening. Because, you turn around and look at your bank account, there's nothing there. It's very threatening.
Yeah.
Okay, so Kathy, how about you? What's been the most threatening to your financial security?
I would definitely agree that it's myself. This is probably one of the more painful parts of my life, but I grew up in the era where women went to college to get a better grade of husband.
Yep.
And once you had children, you stayed home and you got pin money. And going to work with my parents and working under them sort of reinforced that system in very subtle ways that I was not even conscious of. Yeah. But I am always willing to settle for just enough, and mm-hmm. that is very frustrating for me. There's that ceiling that was put on me, and I know how stupid that is. In my mind, I understand that I can rise above that, but there is a part of me that always stops at that place where women and mothers and that's enough, you know?
Yeah, kind of like what I said in the very beginning. we're all kind of there. That's part of our culture. That's how we were raised.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just one of those things that you can't always look internally and say, I was willing to settle for it, because it was so insidiously reinforced by the culture that is what we've come to expect. And the glass ceiling being the representation of that is true almost throughout all of our life, you know, that there is a certain level that we all stop at. And I don't know what that is. For each woman, it's different. I remember taking a quiz one time, and the question was, what is it that you think you can honestly expect to earn in your lifetime? What's the maximum amount of salary that you think you would ever qualify for? And of course, there were brackets. So it might be $50,000 to $75,000, $100,000 to $150,000, $200,000 to $250,000, and beyond that. And honestly, it's funny because now you know that this is my world of personal finance. I put myself in between $200,000 and $250,000. Now, I don't know why. I have no idea why that just seemed to fit right in my feelings. But I looked at that and I thought, now, why? Why can I not see an unlimited number? Why can't I see a million? Why can't I put that in there for me? And I think it's just by what you just said. It's a certain expectation that's about as much as we are entitled to. I don't know why that is, but we've got to change that, clearly.
I agree. We have to change that. And
really,
Lynn, when you were saying $250,000 and why it wasn't more,
yeah,
I had trouble even claiming a six figure income.
Yeah,
I think I grew up with that was just out of the range altogether. It was out of the range of my background.
Yes,
out of the range of my being a female, especially. No matter what. No matter what I did, I wasn't going to make that kind of money. So don't even dream it.
Yeah, I
know. One of the things that was very hard for me was I cleaned out both my grandmother and my mother's homes when they passed, and neither one of them had a single thing that was worth keeping.
Yeah.
I thought said so much about their sense of worth. You know, that really stuck with me. That I wasn't aware of it when they were alive, but it was only in seeing what they left behind that I realized how little they had given themselves over the years.
Didn't you find a stash somewhere?
No.
Oh, I did that for my mom and for my grandmother. They, you know, there was always that rainy day fund, as they called it. But in the end, I never knew where it was because it was just completely inaccessible. You just never touched it. But I would find things like little gold coins, or there were silver dollars in a little drawstring purse that was hidden underneath the underwear somewhere in a drawer, you know, that kind of thing. But it didn't mean much, because really in real value it might have been maybe $50, but to them that was their sense of security, that they had their little stash. So, you know, maybe you need to go back and look again, because you might find it somewhere. You just never know. But anyway, I want to say thanks so much to both of you for being with me today. My guests, Kathy DeGatti and Ellen Harnett, are both parts of the Digestive Divas, which is a name I just love that. I think that's really cool. And so to all of you in my Power of the Purse community, I hope today's podcast was helpful in enriching your understanding of money and how it can help you achieve your life goals. If you'd like to spend 15 minutes on a call with me and ask me questions about your personal finances, please go to my website, powerofthepursepodcast.com. Select the Contact tab and find a time that works for you. Thanks again, Kathy and Ellen, for sharing your time and knowledge. And again, let everybody know where they can reach you.
866-222-6490. They can also go to www.backtobasicwellness.com/Lynn Evans.
Okay.
They fill out a form there. We'll send them a diet evaluation questionnaire and a link to our time trade. Fill out your diet questionnaire, and we will give you a free 30-minute consultation and give you some tips that you can implement right away and start feeling better immediately.
Okay, ladies, thanks. Until the next time, thanks for listening. And remember, money is not the enemy. Your ignorance of it is. Goodbye. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
We hope you've enjoyed your time with us on this episode of the Power of the Purse podcast. If you're ready to take action, go to lynnsevans.com/call and sign up for an exclusive one-on-one call with your host, Lynn Evans. Thanks again, and join us next time to explore more ways you can take control of your finances and your life.